Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio, your cosmetic surgery connection. Join cosmetic surgery Nip Tuck Coach, beauty expert, and author of Safety First, A Consumer Guide to Cosmetic Surgery, Michelle Garber, your host of the Nip Tuck Radio Show. Michelle's goal is to empower listeners and help them make safe cosmetic surgery procedure choices. This fun and lively show explores the world of beauty and cosmetic surgery and features expert guests on a variety of topics. No hype. Your host, Michelle Garber, is here today to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic surgery.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Garber, and welcome to another week of Nip Tuck Coach Radio. I'm Michelle Garber, your host, and we are broadcasting live this morning from San Francisco. If you don't know me, I'm founder of Nip Tuck Coach, an independent cosmetic surgery consultancy, helping you navigate through the confusing world of cosmetic procedures and surgery by keeping you safe and well-informed, so that not only do you get a great result, but you get the best result. And to create more consumer awareness for safe cosmetic and plastic surgery procedures, I've written a comprehensive little guide called Safety First, the 10 Golden Rules for Safe Cosmetic Surgery, which you can download for free at my website at www.niptuckcoach.com. Today we're going to be talking about breast revision surgery with my guest, Dr. Stephen Ronan, whose practice is located in Danville, California. Hello, Dr. Ronan. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Hello there. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Ronan is a board-certified plastic surgeon specializing in face and body as well as laser treatments. He owns and is the medical director of the Cutera Clinic. This clinic is the clinical research center for Cutera, a leader in aesthetic laser industry. Dr. Ronan is a principal investigator for multiple ongoing clinical trials. He also lectures and trains other physicians in advanced aesthetic laser therapy. Dr. Ronan has been quoted by Glamour Magazine, the San Francisco Examiner, Fashion Wire Daily. He has also authored several articles for local magazines, including Diablo Magazine, Valley Lifestyle Magazine, Visage Magazine, and the Valley Citizen. Dr. Ronan has been a guest on The Doctors and has been seen locally on NBC, CBS, and ABC. So I did some research on breast revision surgeries. And in 2013 in the United States, there was 55,161 breast revisions. Are you seeing an increase in breast revision surgeries in your practice, Dr. Ronan?
Well, breast revision surgery has always been a pretty big component of our practice here. And I think there has been a gradual increase of this type of procedure over time. There really are a whole bunch of different reasons as to why someone might seek a breast revision surgery.
So I hear frequently statements from women saying that they've had a bad boob job, they don't like the way it looks, they're too large, they've got unsightly scars, they're just really unhappy. Is some of this not managing their expectations? I know there's medical reasons for having a breast revision where it's really, where there's it's necessary. But what percentage is due to a lack of understanding of the expectations, and what percentage is actually aesthetic reasons that are due to complications?
Well, you know, there are definitely those patients that are unhappy that really can never be made happy, really, no matter what you do. And I would say that those are a smaller number of the breast revisions, take a disproportionate amount of time in dealing with them. And it varies from just the person that can't be pleased no matter what you do, despite they're having a great result somewhere, they might come in and complain about it and I'm not exactly sure what they're complaining about. And one red flag for me at any time is if someone starts talking about a feature and I can't tell instantly what they're talking about, and more, it's a bit of a red flag. And if I have to try to figure out what's wrong with the feature, then you know, that's usually a sign that their expectations or their perception is not in line with you know, with reality.
So how do you manage these patients?
Well, I'm thinking of one in particular that had significant asymmetry and drooping, and developmentally had some shape issues with her breasts. And we did an augment lift on her. Everything went fantastic. And about 4 years later, I got a three-page single space letter from her of hatred, of dissatisfaction, disappointment, you know, that how they were disfigured, how she'd seen multiple surgeons who all had said she needed to have a complete redo, but it would be impossible on her because things were so bad. And so I brought her in. I said, well, please, you know, come back for an appointment. And I took a look, and you know, before she came in, her photos, and I thought, wow, they look fantastic. I mean, I don't get the problem here. So when she came in, I said, okay, I've read your letter, and you know, and here's your pictures. I took a look. They look really good. You know, what's going on? And I said, they look like a very nice natural result. She said, well, that's the problem. They look like they're natural. And
I mean, they don't, you know, look like stripper boobs?
She said, she went on for 15 minutes about how society says that she should look like someone from Playboy and Penthouse, and she didn't look like that because they were too natural, and this went on and on. And so I probably spent an hour and a half with her trying to bring her towards realistic expectations. And it eventually culminated in an appointment with a counselor who's not too far from my office, who actually walked over and picked her up and took her for an appointment to begin a process of counseling, you know, for her.
Wow.
So you can have, you know, that's one extreme. And those are the fewer the group of revisions or who would seek revision, that's in the smaller category, when, you know, what they want is just not not, you know, in reality.
So she may have had body dysmorphic disorder
or something some sort
along,
of a,
or some
yeah.
sort of self-esteem disorder.
She,
of,
she,
yes.
Growing up with kind of disfigured, unsightly breasts, and letting that be the crutch for why anything wasn't exactly right in her life, you know, and then she gets them fixed and they actually look fantastic, but that crutch isn't there anymore. Now you can't blame a funny shaped breast for why, you know, you're not getting along with someone. So at that point, you know, some time went on for her and things kind of came apart. And then she, you know, wants to keep blaming a feature.
Well, first of all, it was wonderful that you were able to direct her for counseling, and that someone was close by and was able to help her. And second, I think it's very common when sometimes patients have cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery, that they think their life is going to change because they're changing one feature, but if they have some psychological issues, that change in that one feature or several features is not going to really change their lives. And that's a misperception I think a lot of people have. So they
right.
need to take care of the psychology behind why they're having this work done and sort through that and realize that if they don't like the way their breasts look now and they have surgery and there's other issues, that they'll never be happy no matter what they do to their body. So what are some of the popular reasons then that are real reasons for revision surgery?
Well,
medically
it's
necessary. I don't want to
yeah.
use the word
so,
real.
So
because
now,
real
now
is
there's
everyone's
the
perception.
Right. Now there's the bigger group of patients that are seeking revisional surgery because they're not pleased with the result of their prior one or two or five surgeries. And so I've noticed, having done so many of these, that there are some sort of categories that they fall into, and having had one or multiple things done. And, you know, one of them is having implants on top of the muscle. One of them is having your chest muscle cut. One of them is trying to avoid and not do a lift when you should. One of them can be, you know, poor choice of the type or size of implant. So, and one of them is to do an augment when you really wanted a lift. So, or choosing the wrong procedure. So all of those things are, you know, happen all the time in you know, by themselves or in combinations, and you know, I think are very likely to push someone down a path that they'd end up with a revision.
So when should a patient consider having revision surgery? How soon after their initial surgery should they consider it, and then what are some of the factors?
Well, there's lots of things to consider, and I guess we've sort of left out of the discussion if someone has a problem with their implant, like it deflates or they have caps or contracture. So, and those are kind of like things that can happen to anybody who has an implant and you know, and are dealt with. But I guess we're talking more now about revisions that happen that, you know, or maybe more avoidable. And so as to when they should do a correction, it's kind of complicated. There is no hard set rule. I usually like to wait a year after the prior surgery or more. And after that, although that's not a hard rule, after that, it's when does it fit into the patient's life? You know, they're going to have downtime. They're going to have to miss some work. There's an expense, and all of those things get factored into when someone's going to choose, you know, to make a correction.
So you touched on some of the more medically necessary aspects of having a revision. How often does this actually happen? Post-op sagging, asymmetry, unsightly scars?
So
place in the wrong place.
Yeah, so putting, you know, kind of backing up to why those things happen. I, you know, have many, many times seen a patient and told them, you need, I think the pathway for you is an augment with a lift or you know, whatever plan we make. And you know, they've gone elsewhere because they didn't like the plan that included a lift. They just wanted to do an augment. And then they come back here a year later and say, it didn't go so well. Can you fix it? I don't know how many times that's happened. But the key is decision-making up front at the time of your original consult and your original surgery. If you make good decisions then you're you know, much less likely to need a revision later.
Is there an age factor that can affect a revision surgery in a healthy adult?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, you can make good, you know, that it's not really the age of the patient as much as it is the decision-making up front. So I've done revisions on patients
of
every age.
So it sounds like a lot of this really has to do with planning and choosing the right surgeon and having a good understanding of the pros and the cons of different ways in which to do the initial surgery.
Absolutely. That's 100%, you know, correct. Is that when, you know, if you choose to go on top of the muscle, then I also think you're choosing a higher revision rate for really multiple reasons, if you choose a procedure where they cut your chest muscle, which I think the majority of plastic surgeons do, I think that choice is going to come with it a higher revision rate, and so those choices that you make and that the patient may be completely unaware of, right? I mean, they may just say, "I want an augment." They may be unaware of these choices that are being made, but those are the things I think lead to higher revisions.
So then they need to have a better understanding then of what these choices are, and then it's up to the surgeon to sit down with them and explain what these choices are.
Exactly.
To avoid
right.
all the revisions.
It's really, a very common one is that, everybody wants to have an augment. Nobody wants to have an augment lift. It's very understandable. It's less expensive to have just the augment, and I can make a tiny incision in someone's armpit in a wrinkle that you can hardly see later, no incision on the breast, and you're done. Okay, that's fantastic. With a lift, it costs more, and you have a scar on the breast. So who says, sign me up for that, please? Who's going to say, I'd rather have an augment lift over an augment? Nobody, right? So patients are, sometimes patients are disappointed when they find out they have to have a lift, which is, very understandable. I try to do a good job to educate patients that the implant needs to go where it's supposed to go on your chest, and then if your breast isn't on top of it, then we need to move it on top. Now, a contrary or a different way of thinking, which I don't subscribe to, is that if the breast is kind of sliding down and partly on the abdomen, we cut the chest muscle and then slide your implant down into the droopy breast. So you then can avoid a lift because you put the implant half on the chest, half on the abdomen into the droopy breast. The problem with that, okay, now the patient thinks, I don't have to have a lift. This is fantastic. I can only have that little incision now, and it's less money. The problem with that is you cut the support system for the implant against gravity, which is the chest muscle. So you want the chest muscle to hold the implant up for all time, against gravity. And so you've cut that, and then you put a weight, and the implant is essentially a weight, into a breast that's already a little droopy, which by definition isn't up for the task of holding itself up because it's drooping. So you put a weight into a droopy breast, and guess what happens over the next year or so? They go towards the floor. It's going to get more droopy, and the implant is too low on the chest. So it's kind of half on the abdomen, half on the chest. And so they come back in a year, and they say, okay, what happened here? Why do these look so bad? And they want a revision. And so those are the kind of choices that get made early on that lead to problems, really more complicated problems later on.
So if someone just has an implant and not a lift, does aging and gravity affect that implant?
Oh, for
as
sure.
As they age.
Yeah, absolutely. So, every minute, a minute passes every day, you get a day older. And so gravity is going to be acting on all of us all the time. But it's way more complicated than that. There's genetics involved. There's how strong the connective tissue is or not, how much breast tissue there is or not. If there's a lot of breast tissue, gravity's got a lot to grab onto and pull down. If you have hardly any breast tissue, you may never droop at all, ever. If the implant just kind of keeps you up. If you have tight, firm connective tissue, then you're much less likely to droop. If you're very weak, then you're more likely to. And I can actually feel that when I'm doing surgery, as to what someone's connective tissue is like. And so I'll actually gear the postoperative instructions for their body and kind of the integrity of their tissue.
So So you can't really, though, predict if you have, if you do breast implants in a young woman in her, you know, 20s or 30s, that come when she's in her 50s, she will probably need a revision.
You can't predict that well, but you can kind of give percentages. So, for example, I saw a breast lift consult this morning of she's probably 33 or 4, and she has her own, all of her own breast tissue, and she has, you know, sagged some, but her nipples are still forward pointing. Her tissue's kind of dense and firm, and I can, and her skin tone is good. They've just kind of slid down. So I know that when I do a lift on her, it's really going to kind of take the shape of an implant, and she's going to be, you know, unlikely to recur on her drooping soon. And, you know, although gravity's slowly going to work on her, but it's going to be a slow process, where there's some other patients that their skin tone is so shot, their nipples are pointing straight down, that we can, you know, put them as high as we can, and they're going to droop faster, you know, just based on their skin tone and genetics or and elasticity. So it's very complicated. It's not just age or just, you know, one thing. Like, a whole bunch of things go in, and I can tell someone, like this morning, you're unlikely to repeat this, you know, or if you do, it's going to be a while. Whereas someone else, I'll say, you know, you're likely to want a revision to your lift at some point, because you're going to, you know, your skin just isn't that, you know, doesn't have that great elasticity. So it's kind of like just guesses, you know, educated guesses as to what's going to happen.
Right, because you really can't predict. You don't know how someone's really going to age, or you don't know what's going to happen to your body.
Or if they're going to have a pregnancy.
I received an, right,
yeah.
After, and breastfeeding. I received an email from a Facebook fan, and she wanted me to ask you, she's had several revisions and wants to know if it's more complicated after you've had more than one revision surgery, if you need another, and is there a higher risk of losing sensitivity around the nipple area?
Good question, complicated answer. So it completely depends on what you have to do. So someone may have had 4 or 5 revisions and comes in, and it is so, you know, you look and you see so many things that can be corrected or so many problems that the next procedure is going to be complicated, difficult, invasive, you know, and would maybe have a higher chance of having more numbness. And there's other things I look at and I think, okay, I just have to do, you know, do what's called a capsulorraphy over in this quadrant, and do a release over here, and it's not that invasive and it really shouldn't lead to any numbness or, you know, temporary, you know, very temporary numbness at best. So it's just more, you know, case by case basis. And it really just depends on anatomy, right? There's not, if you go where the nerves are, you know, if you dissect where the nerves are, you're going to have more numbness. If you're not in that zone, you're going to have less.
I see. So what are some of the complications patients should be aware of?
Complications?
Right, from having revision, like what are some of the complications?
You know, it really is very similar to just a primary augment or augment lift. You know, having an infection, fortunately those are, you know, extremely rare in these kind of cases. Having bleeding after surgery, I think you're more likely to have bleeding after surgery on redos than you are on primary cases. But if you do have it, you have to go, you know, wash it out, deal with it. numbness is you know, typically higher risk during revisional type surgeries than in primaries. You know, your caps or contracture risk is probably a little bit higher in revisional cases than it would be in primaries. But it's all the same types of things. but maybe a little bit more risk involved with the revisions. The one thing that would be, you know, a bigger problem in revisions as well is sometimes tissue loss or having a healing problem, you know, at the incision. If someone's had 4 or 5 surgeries, it depending on what was done previously and what, you know, anatomy was changed, there could be healing problems.
So what is the recovery time?
It's usually very similar to a primary. So for most patients, they're back to work within a week or less. It doesn't matter if I do an augment lift or a revisional case. Usually it's a week or less back to work. Usually at 10 to 14 days, low impact aerobics. And then as far as, kind of more hardcore activities, it's usually a month or more, unless I do something called capsulorraphy, in which case we would take 2 or 3 months without more strenuous activities.
And costs?
Costs, that's a great question. So let's go over a scenario. Let's say that someone comes in and has an augment and it costs $10. And so they go to Dr. X and pay $10 and they get an augment and it doesn't come out the way they want. So then they go to Dr. Y and they say, okay, I went to Dr. X, I paid $10, I had this augment and it's not perfect. I want it, better. And so they make a plan to make an adjustment or revision. That revisional surgery will be typically far more complicated, risky, take more time than the primary ever would. And so Dr. Y is thinking, well, you pay $10 for an augment. I should probably charge $25 for this revision because it is at least 2.5 times harder to do. And so then he looks at the patient, and the patient says, $25. The patient is saying, I've already paid $10. I've already paid for this to be right. This isn't going to cost me anything, is it? Because I've already paid. And not entirely unreasonable for them to think, I paid $10. I wanted a nice augment. Where is it? So they think, from their standpoint, it shouldn't cost anything to fix. And the surgeon thinks from their standpoint, this is very complicated. Like, this is a $25 case, not a $10. And so I kind of understand both sides of that, but what I've always done, or my compromise, is that I charge for revisional cases much as I would for the primary. So, yes, they take a lot longer. They're much more difficult, et cetera. But I just kind of charge as if you just came here for the first time. So that's kind of my compromise, in my head at least, with how I do them.
And what if it's your revision from your patient?
Yeah, fortunately, we don't have to do many revisions. But if it's my revision, then it depends on what it is. So if it's someone that has bleeding after surgery, we just go back and do it. If it's someone that needs something, a scar revision or something, sometimes it's just the supplies, what it would cost to do that. So it's very minimal.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ronan. We're almost out of time. If listeners would like to contact Dr. Ronan, your website is Black Hawk Plastic Surgery. Is that correct?
That's right, blackhawkplasticsurgery.com.
And you're on Facebook also, Black Hawk Plastic Surgery?
Exactly, yes.
And do you have a Twitter handle?
I do. The question is, what is it?
Maybe Black Hawk Plastic Surgery?
I think it's, I don't know what it is. I think it might be S.J. Ronan or Dr.
Well,
Ronan
I'm sure
or something.
Listeners could find it on your website.
Yeah, it is S.J. Ronan, M.D., at S.J.
Okay,
Ronan, M.D.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you for listening to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio. If you missed any episodes, they are available for download or on iTunes. Please visit us on Facebook and Twitter at hashtag Nip Tuck Coach and hashtag Safe Cosmetic Surgery and Safety First. And if you'd like a copy of my ebook, please visit my website. Have a beautiful weekend. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio. Join us next week for another exciting program about the world of cosmetic surgery and beauty. To learn more about Michelle Garber, go to www.niptuckcoach.com. To consult with Michelle directly, call 415-494-7211.